If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love of the all that is. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is the work of the Masters and their disciples on Earth today. So if you're ready, relax, take a deep breath, and call yourself forward into your own discipleship. A disciple is one who is exerting self-discipline in line with their higher self. So if that's you, you can call that part of yourself forward. And if you would like, you can ask for a deepening of that sense of discipleship. And that stepping forth into that discipleship in some form of service, if you've not already found your particular niche. Let's take another deep breath and make a conscious integration with the highest part of your God self that you can possibly imagine. Imagine a stream of golden light from the very heart of the cosmic all that is flowing down to the top of your head, clearing, balancing, aligning, integrating all of your subtle bodies, your chakras, your endocrine system, and flowing as golden liquid light all the way through your nervous system and down through your entire body, out your feet, and connecting and grounding in the center of the soul star in the middle of the earth. Feel that strong connection from the very heart of Source all the way through you as a living pillar of divine light, as a gift of divine bestowal into time and space, becoming and being. You are that full continuum of multidimensional awareness. There is nowhere you are not, nor is there any end to that divine essence that you are. You are eternal, immortal, ever pure, and remain entirely unaffected and untouched by the shadow passage in time and space, which would be this thought form that moves across the earth, that has a name and a story and a label. But we're called to a higher perspective where we can look down with great compassion and a lot of laughter and humor at this persona, this little puppet that we are dangling into time and space. And that higher part of us, that Atma, that divine spirit, is working the strings of this little puppet. But it's a dance. It's a play. It's an enactment. And the main thing is to remember that, so that you don't get identified with the puppet or its performance. But as a divine puppeteer, you make sure that it stays in tune with the music. And you guide it so that its performance is excellent. So that's a dual perspective of one who is awakening to the divine self. They look at their life as if from a distance. Sometimes I think many of you have that feeling of unreality. In fact, we have that common expression today. Wow, that's unreal. Yes, that's entirely accurate. It's all unreal. And yet, like Krishna, having no need to act, we enter into action for the benefit of all sentient beings. And that is the life of a disciple. We come into the world to act for the benefit of all sentient beings. And bear in mind, we are all disciples from the great, great, great cosmic Christos, all the way down to the person who is just barely starting to stir awake. We are all disciples. And we are all masters. Because the Divine Spirit is the master of masters. The Divine Spirit is the avatar, is the one that is the grand puppeteer, the one that is pulling all of the strings of your multidimensional selves. So begin to expand that sense of selfhood. Each seminar we seek to expand that sense of being connected in an unbroken continuum of divine extension, bestowal, and gifting. You are the bestowal. You are the blessing. You are the gifting. You are that disciple that is choosing to come into the disciplining of the self so that it flows in perfect congruency with that which is greater, that greater self. So we are here to be indwelt by the universal God force. Are you? We are here as chalices of living love to be poured out upon all. Are you? We are here to love and cherish and serve all life. Are you? We are here to be lived through by our greater self. Are you? We are to serve as channels of light, love, and grace in our homes, our workplaces, and wherever we may happen to be. We are here to be used for others. Are you? Now, if by some strange occurrence, those that are still listening to me, if this does not strike a chord of resonance at all within your current reality and sense of self, then if you want this, you need to ask to have your heart opened. Ask to have your heart divinely touched, softened, and opened. Because if this does not strike a resonance, it means your heart is closed. And you'll need to make an effort to connect with your higher self. Sometimes we feel shut down because we have not yet made peace with our past. That needs to be healed, forgiven and released. As long as there is grievance in the heart, you have hidden the light of the world that you are. Love holds no grievances. So deal with your grievance. Make peace with your past and your present and yourself and your life here and now. You will notice automatically that the heart begins to soften and open. And the proof that you've made that contact, that the heart is opened, and that the contact with your higher divine self has been made, is a spontaneous outpouring of desire to serve. That's the proof. You'll have that outpouring of goodwill and the desire to be of service in some way. It's not something you think about, or it becomes an automatic response. Wherever you are, it's your automatic default setting. And that lets you know, indeed, you are a working disciple, that you are on purpose with your life, and that you're involved in participating in the work of the Masters today on the earth. So, are you aware that you are a working disciple of the Masters? Have you found your place of service and gotten involved? Or are you still seeking where to tuck in? Are you aware of your strengths, your particular gifting, your inclinations of consciousness? And are you aware of your shortcomings? Is your nature one that is socially oriented? Are you a people person? Or do you tend to be more reclusive? If you don't know yourself, it's very, very difficult to know anything else. The secrets of the universe exist within you. Your entire biosphere, in fact, every level of your being, is a mini cosmos reflecting and mirroring the macrocosm. Everything in the cosmos, in the God, the force itself, is replicated in you. That is why to know yourself is the very, very first instruction in the halls of knowledge. Know thyself. Let me read this from Sai Baba. This is from his beautiful book, Love is My Message. I quote, "Love all, respect all, serve all, but do not believe that all have equal rights, obligations, and duties. Not all cars are equal, nor are all men. The Dharma, or code of conduct for each of us, has to be different. For it is decided by changing factors like age, profession, status, authority, scholarship, and also by considering whether a person is male or female, teacher or pupil, master or servant. But the basic principles of Dharma are truth, love, fortitude, and nonviolence. All the various codes, written and unwritten, are only elaborations of these basic principles. The four goals laid down by Sai are in fact those laid down by the Vedas. They are Satya, truth, Dharma, righteousness, Shanti, peace, and Prema, love. Mankind has to understand the importance of these four goals. Accept them, adore them, and practice them in daily life. Only then can divinity, latent in man, shine forth in all its glory. So, living a life of truth, righteousness, peace, and love would, in a nutshell, characterize a life of discipleship, where you have that constantly before you as what you aspire to automatically portray in your daily life. Last week we spoke about the Mahatmas. That is the word that we use when we say great soul or master. And we spoke a little bit about what a Mahatma is. And so I said that I might continue that topic this week, and thus I shall do so. So, I think I'll start with a story. Some years back, about 21 years to be exact, I was doing a workshop in Pasadena, California, and I had an idea to have each participant assume the position and identity of themselves as an ascended master. And so each of the participants were addressed as Master so-and-so, and they all sat in a council meeting around an oval table, and each person in turn, as their ascended master self, presented their individual ideas and suggestions as to how they would address world issues, problems in the world. And, you know, they got so into it that they surprised even themselves. And they became so involved and identified with their roles that they forgot all about being in a workshop. And even lost track of their former human identity as they fully embodied their mastery and as they addressed their fellow council members. So in that way, they tapped into new levels of insight and awareness and came up with some really excellent workable plans. You see, they were utilizing a major key to manifestation, and that is to act from the end result. In this case, from the point of view of already being an ascended master and acting as if that were so now. You see, that's what I'm referring to when I say call yourself forward. You can call yourself forward into your ascended mastery. Not as a point to be vainglorious and to lord it over other people, but to know that that level of yourself is tappable, because we are in a time lag back in time, you are already that at a higher level. The blessings already are. That means everything that you aspire to be, you are already in the eternal now. So these things can all be tapped into, called forward, and you can act as if you alone have the authority to do that at any time. You can always call yourself that part of yourself that is that, whatever it is that you are seeking to embody, you can call it forward now and embody it. Well, needless to say, this workshop left a lasting impression upon each one of the participants. And it's interesting because I know these people today, those that are still in the body, and they have been working ever since then as a group and are working on very high-level work as working initiates with the masters. And they do many, many hours of very consecrated global service meditation work every single day. And so that left a... They called themselves forward, and they didn't slide back. They kept advancing. So know that the masters are busy global executives involved in service. The masters are involved with planetary and interplanetary affairs that involve every area of life. So basically, mastery involves being responsible for fostering global well-being. Being responsible for fostering global well-being. That's what masters are involved with. And they function as multidimensional CEOs in positions of administrative leadership. So mastership always means assuming responsibility. As you progress spiritually and you have mastered your personal lower self and the ego and all of that, you begin to expand to greater and greater circumferences, let's say, of embracement, meaning you take into your essence more and more of an arena over which you are responsible for fostering and bettering without interfering. Masters don't do it for you. They administrate energy which supports those in the world in their awakening and integration spiritually. So the masters come from every race, culture, and spiritual background. Some are married. Some have children. Some don't. Some live as normal, quote, quote, married people. Some live celibate as brother and sister. Others live more like hermits. Some wear business suits and move about in society. There are masters in society today moving about. I recognize them. They don't wear a label saying, I'm Master so-and-so. They very often don't use their real names. In fact, the masters seldom are addressed by their names. Usually they use their initials. And they are excellent. Wherever they are in evidence, they exhibit excellence. They're grounded. They have excellent minds, clear, because it's unclouded with the ego and the ego's thinking and mentality. The mind has become clear like a diamond and multifaceted in its breadth of understanding and compassion and encompassment and facilitation. Some of the masters work more in solitude. Many of them work in holding a focus in meditation in which they hold that vision of some aspect of the plan. And that's the way they serve. It was said once that if all of these Tibetan monks and nuns would stop their meditations in the Himalayas, that the world itself would collapse in a pile of dust. So the world is actually held intact by the minds and the spirits and the meditational focus of countless evolved beings. This is the direction our spiritual life is to lead us, to master ourselves, to master the lower nature, to cross out the little I, to crucify that ego on the cross of time and space, that the Christ can resurrect, that the Christed One, the Anointed One, can resurrect from the cross of time, space, and manifestation. And as you do that, you will move into bodies of light and have a choice to serve whoever you wish on this planet, other planets, this universe, other universes, to go into the realms of the unmanifest. There are many, many choices that open before one who has manifested their divine perfection. So the main focuses of the Masters working in terms of the Earth planet right now is to work for the equitable distribution worldwide of food, shelter, education, and medical care for everyone. And the appropriate managing of the energy resources of this planet so that you don't have the great disparity where two-thirds of the population are barely surviving and a small percentage are flourishing. That should not be. There should be the equal distribution of all the necessities of life for all of humanity. And that needs to be given without a monetary base. These things should be there free. Sai Baba in India has started that very process in what he has created in Puttaparthi, in the city of Puttaparthi, the surrounding areas, and throughout India. And the whole focus is that shelter and food and education and medical care has been given freely for over 70 years, over 70 years. I probably could say 86 years, because from the time he was a child, he was manifesting and giving things to the people around him. But in terms of the systems where he had put systems in place in society with the hospitals and the educational institutions and the dormitories and the food and everything and the water projects and the wells, and I mean the list goes on and on and on. And all of these things are state-of-the-art, and they're given freely, without charge to anyone. So he was setting the example for where we're moving into the golden age, where these things, which are the right of every being, every species of being, will be there available for everyone. And how is he implementing that? Through you and me and all of us that have the same desire. Those of us who are the working disciples. We are the hands and feet and the implementers of these divine plans. They're being fostered and guided by Sai Baba and the other masters. But it's up to our hands and feet to make them manifest on Earth. So here are some of the areas that the masters are working in. And as I share these areas, kind of think in your own self if you're involved in those areas now or have an affinity towards them. So the areas that the masters are busy addressing all involve sharing, cooperative endeavor, and goodwill. And these would include global political leadership and the implementing of cooperative endeavor and mutual accord amongst all nations and all global leaders. Then they have a focus for the global education, implementing right human relations by teaching in a curriculum that honors and truthfully portrays, without nationalistic bias, that which pertains to all human beings, that which equalizes the sense of global family, and also addresses the needs of children according to their aptitude, more like the Montessori and definitely the Satya Sai education and human values. There again, you have the moving into this new higher form of education that is being inspired by the masters. Then you have global business and the equitable distribution of life's necessities, such as food, energy, commodities, and so forth. Then you have the global artistic and creative expression, where the arts are used as vehicles to foster and unify global understanding and respect, and to bring harmony. Because all of the artists of the world, even in nations which are at war with each other, you know, the artists don't participate in that. They are involved with sharing the beauty that arises from the radiant soul, which is really the expression of God. So the artist is actually the prophet of the future, the prophet of the golden age, and the one that opens the eyes to a higher vision. And the masters are involved in global science. We've had a very materialistic form of science, which has negated the quantum universe, the higher understanding of the unified field, which is now beginning to percolate through. And it's beginning to, this synthesis, which we'll see in the Aquarian Age, in its full blossoming, of a more synthesized understanding between the spiritual laws that uphold and sustain the entire universe, physics, metaphysics, and consciousness itself, so that there will be a blending of this understanding. And that's being inspired by the masters. Then they have a focus also on global religion, where they are striving to create more of an interfaith understanding. Again, mutual tolerance, respect, and dialogue, so that this infantile squabbling over my God is greater than your God can end, and with it all these fanatical factions and warrings and disputes. You know, only people who have not experienced God fight over God. Anyone who's had a genuine experience of God realizes that God is love and God is one for everyone. And then they have a focus on, you might be surprised, global finance. Yes, there are masters that are particularly focused into what goes on in Wall Street, what goes on in the global markets, and bringing about, again, a more just distribution of global wealth and the creation, for example, of the EU and the program of utilizing the same currency, the same euros throughout the EU was sponsored and inspired by the masters. So while maintaining our cultural identity, there is a movement to help us to celebrate our diversity, to learn from one another in our diversity, not to standardize everything to where it's all beige, but to let each individual culture shine forth and give its gift, because truth is not the domain of any one camp of consciousness. It's only as you turn the facet, the diamond of truth, and let each facet have its moment to shine and scintillate in the light, does the full beauty of that gem, can it be appreciated? So each one that has a facet of the truth, which each religion has a facet like a piece of the puzzle, when that puzzle is put in place, you see the beauty of the overall design, and not before. So one of the mottos of the brother and sisterhoods of light is unity and diversity. And so unity and diversity is one of the major principles that governs the work of the masters and those of us that are the working disciples in the world. So working disciples and initiates, and a disciple, a true disciple, is always an initiate of some degree, initiation meaning expanded light awareness to a certain level. And there are many initiations, and each is an expansion. They're always functioning under the intuitive impression generated by a particular master, lineage, ashram, order. It's a subtle impression that is placed upon the soul and then filters down as best it can into the human personality. A person that spends time in meditation, that seeks higher attunement, becomes very sensitive to the ashramic and the influence of the master, and becomes very available to that transmission, which then inspires them in a particular direction. It doesn't coerce, it doesn't direct, it doesn't channel. It simply gives an impression which the disciple has to intuit for themselves. And the vehicle of that is the intuition itself. And again, another word for intuition is higher awareness or spiritual inner awareness. But you learn to listen and become more and more fine-tuned in your ability to respond to that guidance. So there are seven major rays that govern the various areas of global endeavor. And each one of us has an affinity, a particular affinity, to one or more of these rays. As I enumerate them, again, see if you're already functioning in these areas or a particular area. Ray one is will. It governs politics, governance, jurisprudence, as in law, leadership, and esoteric groups. Ray two, love wisdom, governs education, meditation groups, building, construction, writing, speaking. Ray 3, active intelligence, business, administration, communicative media, money. Yes, money is the third ray energy. Transit systems and energy. Ray 4, harmony. Through conflict. Remember, we're in a polarized world, if that sounds strange to you. Ray 4, harmony through conflict, governs the arts, the military, creative expression, music, dance, painting, and so forth, the Peace Corps. Ray 5, concrete science, governs invention, research, energy, natural law. Ray 6, devotion, religion, and all world religious institutions. Ray 7, ceremonial order, governs alchemy, ritualism, economics, electronics, organizational protocol, Wall Street, architecture, city planning, and all flows of commercial enterprise. So every single one who is a working disciple will find themselves tucked in somewhere in this particular ordering. I'm a second-ray disciple, so I work as a person who speaks, writes, teaches, educates, leads meditation groups, and manifests through the energies primarily of love wisdom. See how that works? So Each of you will find yourself involved in one of these seven major lines of endeavor and busily working away. So your master works with you spiritually, gently, and generally via soul impression, and usually from a distance. For example, there, as I mentioned just in closing in my last seminar, there is a level of our consciousness called in the esoteric teachings, the seventh principle. This would be the monad or the spirit, the Atma, that. And that seventh principle ever resides in Shambhala. Shambhala is a state of consciousness. It is a physical location where the will of God is known, where the administrative head of the logos of this planet manifests his consciousness. And all masters work under the directives of the center where the will of God is known, which is Shambhala. It has a physical location, but don't go looking for it because you can't even see it unless you're called. And you can ride your horse right past it in the Himalayas and never see it. The horse might shy a little and notice a different energy, but unless you're called, you'll never find it. I was impelled into it without any effort on my part one day when I was thrust out of body suddenly and into this incredible place, and later found out it was Shambhala. So sometimes you are called out of body at night and you find yourself in classes there. I was in a class there where everyone was dressed in a royal blue robe with a hood, which was interesting because I happened to have a bathrobe like that. It looked like a monk's robe from the time of St. Francis, only it was blue. I always wanted it to be brown like St. Francis, but it was blue. And then when I found myself in this class in Shambhala, everyone in the class had on this royal blue. This was many, many years ago, over 40 years ago. But all of the masters working upon the earth function under the jurisdiction of the administrative king of Shambhala, who is our planetary logos, called Sanat Kumara. And they're all called forward into council meetings periodically. And that was another bleed-through sense of consciousness I had from the time I was quite young. I would periodically see this council meeting in a cave around this large oval table that had like a globe in the center in which you could see anything happening on the planet, like a scrying lens, like a crystal ball kind of. But it was set down into the table, almost like those lenses that we have aboard ship. But the consciousness and the focus of the group would enable different things to appear so that they could literally use it to look into, prophetically, into the energies and how they were aligning themselves for the future. I would say they use it as a point of focus more than for divination. They weren't practicing divination. They don't need to do that. But it was like a focalizing instrument, if you would. But later on, I found out that was Shambhala. I also was taken and shown many, many what looked like museums where they had the replica of all the fauna and flora and species of animals, many of whom are now extinct. And the races and root races of man from the beginning of time. They have replicas of all of that down there. And another thing that's interesting is that there's a little replica of each disciple that the master keeps. And they're called teraphs, T-E-R-A-P-H, S, plural, teraph, or teraph. And it's an exact mini-replica of one's subtle bodies and the play of energy moving through them at any given moment. So that much like a gardener is cultivating a garden, the master can make little adjustments to that teraph and assist the disciple, giving strength where it's needed or support where it's needed or whatever. And the only thing I could think of to liken it to, if you remember the little holographic images of Princess Leia in Star Wars that she would use to communicate, the Teraths resemble that to a certain extent. Kind of, sort of. Not exactly, but that's the closest thing I could think of to liken the Teraph to. It's composed in etheric physical matter, as is Shambhala, which means it's composed of the four etheric subplanes above the dense physical plane. In English, that would mean each dimension, including the physical, has seven planes. The first three are tangible, and the upper four are less tangible. They would be called the etheric physical. And that's what you're vibrationally moving into as you move into your light body. You're moving into a physical, but a less dense physical body. I've termed it usually the etheric hyphen physical. Or the body of light, if that works for you better. So when one leaves their physical body to rest at night, the body will be sleeping. Usually, if you have some degree of awareness out of the body after you've fallen asleep, you'll notice an advanced disciple of your master will come to escort you to classes or spiritual group work that you are doing with the master's group upon the inner plane. So the physical body may need rest, but you don't. The spirit never gets tired, it's just the physical body. So, and the physical body, it's interesting, gets tired, according to the masters, due to the friction of the self and the non-self. In other words, the friction of your true self rubbing up against the dense materiality of the false self is what causes physical tiredness. So, of course, the more that you transcend physical body consciousness and identifying with its limitation, the more energy you have, which is why the masters, they don't show any wear and tear or physical tiredness ever. And Sai Baba, too, he's just as fresh as a daisy. If he's been standing out for many, many hours in the boiling sun, feeding people and ministering to them, as I've seen him done many, many times, he's fresh as a daisy afterwards. Or if he looks a little fatigued, within a few seconds he regenerates back to that vibrancy. So that's just another adjunct here, because you don't get tired when you're in your true self, just when you're identified with this fiction down here. It takes a lot of effort to uphold a false self. So anyway... you go forth to learn, to serve, to teach, to expand your awareness, and to move about in many, many places throughout not only the Earth, but other planetary systems where you may be involved with work. This happens during the daytime, too. You're just not quite as perhaps aware of when you're bilocated. But when you're not involved in something that's important, or you're just sitting watching TV or whatever, your higher aspects go forth to serve, sometimes in other universes. That's why it's important that you do not judge yourself when you have strange moods that come upon you, or for no apparent reason you may feel just really tired that you have to go to sleep. Putting the body down so that you can leave and focus more fully at that other level is what's recalled, called upon sometimes for you to do. So sometimes you are summoned to meet with a master in his study. I've had several experiences of being in the the study of the Master Kuzumi and also the Master Moria. And in a wonderful biography by Sai Baba devotee and former theosophist, actually not former, theosophist and Sai Baba devotee, who's now passed over, Howard Murfitt, describes in his biography on Helena Blavatsky that when she was a young girl, she lived for, I think, a period of 7 years in the Himalayas, in Tibet, I believe in Shigatse, I believe that was the actual location, in the home of the Master Kuzumi, along with his sister and niece. So you see, here was a master that lived in a house on a physical plane in Tibet with his sister and niece, and the Master Moria, who's his very, very dear close friend and co-worker, also periodically stayed in that same home. So Helena Blavatsky was the emissary directly sent from Shambhala. Every 100 years, the master sent a special emissary out to bring forward the next body of teaching for the planet. And she brought forward Theosophy, which was a wedding of the Eastern and Western teachings that had been divided and separated in understanding because the codes had been lost. I mentioned it at one point that 70,000 precious manuscripts had been destroyed in the fire of the Alexandrian Library. And because of that, there was not that continuity and link between the Eastern teachings and the Western teachings. So part of her job was to supply that missing bridge, that missing link. And she did that under the guidance of the Masters K.H. Kuzumi and the Master M. or Moria. And spent a lot of time with them and they with her, for they would manifest to her physically and teach her directly, and sometimes write, precipitate on her writing their direct teaching. So if you read her books, you will have a sense of their direct transmissions to an initiate and working disciple in the world, which Blavatsky was. In fact, she was one initiation less than a full master. And I understand that after she passed away, she took embodiment 40 years later in Russia in a male body and attained full mastery in that next lifetime. So she's one of the greatest souls ever sent to this planet by the Brotherhood. And we can expect another disciple initiate emissary around the year 2025, according to the Master Joel Kuhl, or DK, the Tibetan Master. So, the protocol that we are to live by as disciples and global workers, Sai Baba sums up very nicely, and it's to love all, serve all. All life is one. Be alike to everyone. So we are to practice love of the divine in all things, and to keep reminding ourselves that no matter how the outer appears, there is a spark of divinity in everyone and everything, and to do everything we possibly can to cultivate a deeper and deeper love of God and a greater and greater and more encompassing love of humanity. We may not like the individual human personality, but we must always love the true person that is much greater than the outer ego presentation. So number one and most foremost for us in terms of our protocol is a sense of global goodwill. We are to really cancel out every vestige of ill will and malice and prejudice from our nature, to ruthlessly uproot ill will, malice, and prejudice. These are like the deadliest of poisons. Number two, we are to practice harmlessness, which really means the intention of your heart, the intention behind your action, and your thoughts. People don't realize that a thought can harm just as much as an action. And out of your intentions and what you hold in your mind, your mouth will speak and your body will act. So harmlessness in intention, thought, word, and action is very important for us. Number three, an attitude of cooperation rather than competition. Number four, we are to be good team players. All of the masters work with groups. Initiation is now group initiation, group discipleship, group, everything is in groups now. And so we practice good sportsmanship. And we're loyal. We're loyal to ourselves as soul, and we're loyal to the master, and we're loyal to our fellow teammates, which means, again, not speaking a single word of ill will, prejudice, or malice to anyone, about anyone, at any time. That is very, very important. So goodwill, harmlessness, cooperation, and loyalty. Those are the protocols for disciples as global workers. So do you love God? To know God is to love God. God is the love inside you. God meets you at the place of your loving. Do you love people? If not, your heart is closed. When your heart is open, you spontaneously have a sense of loving goodwill. So if that is not your experience, pray and ask God to touch, soften, and open your heart and teach you how to love. First yourself. You have to love yourself first. And then you'll find that that love flows out and includes more and more. And engage in some devotional practice. Singing really opens the heart. Bhajans, keeping a gratitude manual. Singing in a choir. Or just toning and chanting by yourself, all out to open the heart. And try to do one kind deed for another every day for no personal payoff. This will really open your heart. Volunteer, pitch in. Begin to see how you can contribute to the happiness and well-being of others. And those are sure ways to open your heart, end depression, overcome selfishness, and experience joy. And I'd like to close with something that the Master Thoth said to my friend Drunvalo Melchizedek, which I think is a wonderful directive for all of us. Remember, your body is light. You are immortal. Just stay centered in your field and be honest in your response. So let's go out chanting Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. All the world and all the beings in all the world. Adonai.